It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Here's a question for you. Did you pick up a new office chair or kitchen gadget on sale on Amazon this week? I am definitely in that camp. Amazon stock soared during its now annual sales event, Amazon Prime Days. And our online shopping habits have been good for Amazon founder and CEO Jeff Bezos, who's the wealthiest person in the world. But how good has Amazon been to its workforce and the communities where its warehouses are located? WPR host Keely Boltina talked with a journalist who's investigating how Amazon has transformed our economy and our society. James Ball is the global editor of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. He wrote the United States of Amazon series for Tortoise Media.
And we've got a caller on the line now. Steve from Sun Prairie is thinking about this combination. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I don't want to date myself here, but I remember watching the great Dr. Milton Friedman on a Phil Donahue episode, probably in the late 70s, early 80s. And Phil Donahue was lamenting how big Kmart was getting and how Kmart was knocking all the mom-and-pop businesses out. And he said, what's going to happen if Sears buys Kmart? They'll rule the world. Well, we all know what happened. Sears bought Kmart, and they're both bankrupt. So there will be other companies that come and take market share away from Amazon when Amazon loses its ability to meet with the client, the customer's expectations are. That's just the history of capitalism.
Steve, thanks for that line of thinking. And James, what do you think about Steve's comment? Can someone just replace Amazon? Is it different?
Steve makes a really good point. And actually, I think Jeff Bezos would agree with him. Bezos is kind of an interesting CEO. Some tech CEOs start to think of themselves as like quite strange, sort of evangelical. The CEO of which used to be called WeWork, talked about building a company that would last 1,000 years, that his children and grandchildren would take over as if it's an ancient empire. Bezos says companies come and companies go. He expects Amazon to decline and to die, but he wants that to happen long after he dies, which is pretty understandable. And so he talks about day one companies and day two. And he says day one companies are trying to grow. They're seeing it as the start of something. They're being very sort of relentlessly focused on expansion, on doing more, doing what they can. And he says the second you become a day two company, it's the beginning of the end. It might take a long time, but essentially you're on managed decline. You're sort of heading towards the exit. And so, yes, Amazon won't be forever, but it intends to be around for quite a long time. And so is it about saying this company's got to take over the world and we'll never be able to handle it, like some people got overexcited on for Sears, for Kmart, for Walmart, you name it? No, it won't be forever. But how do we make sure while it's here, it's working in all of our interests and it's not sort of sucking the life out of the economy too much or taking too big a cost on workers or on society? And maybe we think the balance is just about right where it is. But I think we should at least ask ourselves the question on, is it? Because quite a few people who used to work there, there's even some analysts, will say it's a well-managed, very successful, very focused company, but it's focused on its customers and on its shareholders. Someone needs to look at the wider implications of it.
Talking with James Ball, who's an investigative journalist. His new series looks at the power and influence tech companies wield on our lives, focusing on Amazon today. And James, when you talk about that, making Amazon work while it's around, if it's not too big to fail, it is such a huge part of our economy. Sounds like you're talking regulation.
I think we probably are talking regulation. I think some people would probably like to see Amazon shut down tomorrow, but that would put hundreds of thousands of people out of work and actually deny a lot of people services they like. You know, it isn't just a store. A lot of the web runs on Amazon servers. That's a $40 billion a year business in revenue. You know, they've got our streaming services. They've got Audible. You probably sort of use Amazon services that you don't even know about. What we need to sort of look at is, are we doing enough to cover workers in an environment where Amazon's there? you know, is there a way to find unions that work for much more casual workforces? Should we have more protections in there to sort of look out for them? Are there things we could do to try and make sure that we feel like we're getting a fair amount of tax from companies like Amazon? A lot of brick and mortar stores sort of complain that they have to pay local taxes and Amazon doesn't. And so, of course, it can undercut them. Are there ways we can level the playing field? And if you're not American, and you can guess from my accent, I'm not, Britain gets no tax revenue from everything it sells with Amazon. We get some sales tax, but nothing from the profits. Should it be the case that if this company has sort of become one of our biggest retailers, should it not pay a bit of tax in each company it operates? That's kind of the questions for regulators. I think if they're looking at how do we bring it down for its own sake, that's kind of anti-competitive, that's anti-business, that's not going to help. But can we make sure it's benefiting everyone and not just a tiny group of owners? I think that's exactly what regulators and lawmakers should be looking at.
You mentioned taxes. What kind of taxes does Amazon actually pay?
So Amazon still actually doesn't make nearly as much profit as it could, which helps reduce it a lot. The main sort of things that Amazon pays is, depending where it locates, it does have to pay some local sales taxes and some taxes in countries. But like other multinationals, it's faced quite a lot of criticism for setting up quite elaborate structures that minimize how much corporation tax it pays. And obviously, that mainly affects the US and the US shareholders. Now, all of that's legal, and it's in line with a lot of other companies doing it. But some of the questions for countries around the world is, you know, we used to have UK-based retailers, or France had French retailers that would sell in the country and pay corporation tax and sort of feed through the system. One question that is being asked a lot in Europe is, hey, if Amazon makes, say, a third of its sales here, shouldn't it be paying about a third of its corporation tax here? Now, that's got to get a bit contentious all across the world. And so you might need lawmakers in the US and around the world to go, what's fair for these big companies? How much tax do we think they should be paying? How do we think they should pay it? And I think the risk is that all the regulators end up arguing with each other so much that Amazon and other tech giants can carry on pretty much not paying very much to anyone because we all try and wait to sort this out perfectly first.
You're saying Amazon is a global company, so you need a global approach if you expect to be able to set regulations or standards.
Yeah, there are things that countries can do on their own, and especially when it comes to looking after your workers or checking your conditions or making sure competition's fair. But there are limits to what you can do as one country. Even if you're a country as big as the US, which is sort of unusual now, but the EU overall is a bigger market than the US. It's bigger and it's richer if you count all 27 countries in it. My country is not in it anymore. But that means that it has to be taken very seriously. You've, of course, got growing markets in China and India across the world. And so one country can do a little bit, and if they have the will to do it, they should. But if everyone just focuses on their own thing, they kind of get a bit stuck because these are global companies and they can move jobs, they can move data, they can move warehouses and operations a lot more easily than they could 20 or 30 years ago.
And that was James Ball, global editor of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, talking with WPR host Keely Baltina. Coming up, we learn about life in Wisconsin during the Great Depression. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.